You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Brought to you by PremierBet Namibia Totes. Create your account now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. PremierBet, win big, win now.
Welcome, welcome to all the Eagle FM listeners. You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone, brought to you by PremierBet Namibia Totes. Welcome, welcome to your favorite sports talk radio show here on your favorite talk radio station. Coming to you live from our studio in Windhoek. And as usual, I am your host, Hendy. I will be with you until 8 p.m. this evening. And today, we're going to talk some rugby today. We're going to talk some local rugby today. As the Namibia Rugby Union announced some strategic changes this past weekend. We're going to discuss some of those changes. We're gonna discuss it on the backdrop of conversations we had with the Namibia Rugby Union leadership at the beginning of the season that just concluded. And we'll be in touch with our very own Dwight Links as well, who is our in-house, we can say, rugby expert, but that'll be in around an hour or so, around 7 o'clock, we'll get in touch with Mr. Dwight Links. But first, we'll run through some local sports news as per usual. And if you aren't already, make sure to be following us on all our social media pages. I saw some exciting things are happening on our social media pages for the Weekend of Love. So stay tuned to our social media pages so you can become a winner like the winners that we had over the past weekend for Valentine's Day. That is on Facebook, that is on X, that is on LinkedIn, that is on Instagram, that is on WhatsApp. If you'd like to follow us on WhatsApp, if you'd like to follow the WhatsApp channel, our WhatsApp number is 081-200-41044. That's 081-200-4144. You can text that number if you'd like to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel. That is also the same number you can text. You can WhatsApp, excuse me. You can WhatsApp if you'd like to subscribe to the Village and Newspaper. That is the number one source for all things business, economics, agriculture, industrial, policies, sports sometimes. The number one source of information, and you can get it for a total of $0 and 0 Namibian cents by simply sending a WhatsApp message to 081-200-4144 saying that you'd like to become a subscriber. And a very important step is that you have to, this is non-negotiable, you have to save the number as a contact so that every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning you get the Villager delivered straight to your WhatsApp inbox bright and early for your reading pleasure. Now, another thing you have to look out for is our website as well as our mobile application. That is the Eagle FM mobile application, and the website is www.eaglefm.com.na. And on these two platforms, you can tune into Eagle FM wherever you are in the world. So good evening, good morning, good afternoon to the world that is listening right now, whether you're listening from China, the USA, from England, from Brazil, from Australia. Welcome all. From Egypt, from Rwanda, welcome all, welcome all. And if you happen to have missed a broadcast of any of your favorite Eagle FM shows, then fear not. Simply go to the podcast section and type in the name of your favorite show, and you will have access to all your favorite Eagle FM programs. And on the Eagle FM mobile application, once you download it, that is available on the Google Play Store as well as the Apple App Store, you will notice a nice, nice, beautiful digital rotating billboard for you to interact with. Now, some of the things that this billboard can give you access to that were most recently added include things like the Total Energy's 2025 results and 2026 objectives, of which Namibia has 4 pages dedicated to it. That's a topic for another show. We're here to discuss sports. We have the Africa Peer Review Mechanism. They released a Africa Sovereign Credit Rating Review of 2025. We have a 2026 International AI Safety Report. We have the Namibia Deposit Guarantee Authority Strategic Plan, the latest one that was recently released. We have the Namibia Airports Company 2024-2025 Annual Report is on there. And lastly, one of the new additions was a document detailing the livestock from the Livestock and Livestock Products Board of Namibia, which has a producer's visual guide to notifiable livestock diseases in Namibia. So amongst many other things, you know, there's African constitutions, there's labor statistic reports, all kinds of reports from the World Bank, World Economic Forum, Bank of Namibia reports. So if you'd like to become a smarter citizen, look no further than the Eagle FM mobile application, and you can take in all this great information as you listen to your favorite talk radio station on the go, wherever you are in the world. You are not bound to a specific radio. You can listen to us in the palm of your hand. Now, let's start with some local sporting news. We'll start with football. The Namibia Premier League rounds 17 as well as 18 took place over the weekend. Round 18 just concluded, but we'll start with round 17, where we had Eshoke Chula Chula beating Tigers 4-2. Julinya Athletic played against African Stars. African Stars took that one 4-2 over in Rundu. We had FC Ongos take on Blue Waters. FC Ongos taking that one 1-0. Mighty Gunners and Bucks Buccaneers play to a 0-0 draw. Another draw that took place was between 11 Arrows and the Clever Boys, that is UNAM FC, that ended 1-1. Then Young African drew 1-1 with KK Palace as well. Then moving on to round 18, which took place today, we had Rundu Chiefs beating African Stars 1-0. UNAM FC beating Blue Waters 0-0. Tigers beating KK Palace 1-1. Life Fighters played up against Bucks Buccaneers. Bucks Buccaneers taking that one 3-2. Then Chula Chula finished the weekend with 6 points, beating a Young African 1-0. Julinho finished the weekend with 0 points, unfortunately, after a 2-1 loss to Comas Nampol. FC Ongos Maximum Point Collectors as well, beating 11 Arrows 4-2. And then Mighty Gunners thumped Okahandja United 5-0. So with those fixtures played, it means that Eshoke Chula Chula is at the top of the table, leading African Stars by 2 points. Chula Chula on 37 points, African Stars on 35 points. And in third place is Mighty Gunners. In fourth, you have FC Ongos on 31 points, followed by UNAM in fifth on 27. And in sixth place is Comas Nampol on 25, KK Palace in seventh on 24, 11 Arrows in eighth, Bucks Buccaneers in ninth, Blue Waters in 10th. Okahandja United 11th, Young African 12th, Rundu Chiefs out of the relegation zone on 17 points. They are in 13th place. And then the bottom three consists of Julinho, Life Fighters and Tigers, all on 14 points. So it's tight at the top and at the bottom in the Namibian Premier League, our local league, local Premier League. Glad to have it back. Staying in the local football, you had the Women's League as well, the FNB Namibia Women's Super League, where the Julinho Ladies beat the Desert Foxes 4-0. The Ongos Ladies played up against Comas Nampol. Comas Nampol taking their one 2-1. The African Stars Queens beat the V-Power Angels 1-0. The Nas Babes went up against the Mighty Eagles. Mighty Eagles taking their one 3-2. And we had Mighty Gunners Ladies up against the 11 Arrows Ladies, and the Mighty Gunners Ladies taking that one at 3-1. And lastly, for the weekend in the women's game, we had the UNAM Bokkies up against Windhoek City in an exciting counter that ended 4-3 for Windhoek City. The Brave Gladiators, still staying on local football, the Brave Gladiators announced their squad for the Women's COSAFA Cup, upcoming Women's COSAFA Cup, that will take place in Polokwane in South Africa. That is from the 18th of February to the 1st of March. So good luck to the Brave Gladiators representing the nations on the international stage once more. Don't forget, if you'd like to chime into the studio, you can call in at any time. Our number is 0832-888-401. That's 0832-888-401. Now we'll move over on to cricket, where the Eagles, that is the men's senior national team, is currently in the T20 World Cup, where today they lost to the USA by 31 runs. And their next match is up against Pakistan over at the T20 World Cup. And Namibia's Lawrence Steenkamp managed to come away with 58 runs off just 39 balls in the effort. against the United States. And the Eagles, that was their second match after their opening encounter when they lost to India. So good luck to the Eagles as they continue their World Cup journey. We know what is possible in the cricket world with how well they have been performing lately, locally and internationally. On the junior side of things, this is now in the sport, in the triathlon world, where our very own Nathan Chase, 17-year-old Nathan Chase, won at the 2026 Africa Triathlon Cup, obviously in the junior category, but he finished first, as well as Maya Brinkman, who finished first as well on the ladies' side. So our young athletes performing well on the international stage. We'll be back in just a moment.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Brought to you by PremierBet Namibia Totes. Create your account now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. PremierBet, win big, win now.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. And in our last bit of local news, we have some tennis news coming up where Namibia's Mari van Schalkwyk secured a place in the doubles finals at the ITF Under 18 Junior Tennis World Tour, currently happening in Maputo, that is in Mozambique. She is partnered with South Africa's Courtney Kemp. And our very own van Schalkwyk has won all her doubles matches so far at the J30 Junior Tennis Tournament. So van Schalkwyk and Kemp will take on Zimbabwe's Simfiwe Malunguzu and Britain's Charlotte Perks. And other Namibians in the tournament include Joanivia Besedenote and Israel Dawi, who both reached the doubles semifinals for the boys and girls categories, respectively. Moving on to European football, where we didn't have English Premier League action, but we did have FA Cup round 4 action, where Chelsea took on Hull, beating them 4-0. Man City took on Salford City, beating them 2-0. And Newcastle and Aston Villa played each other, where Newcastle beat Aston Villa 3-1, and Liverpool took on Brighton, beating them 3-0. The Gunners are up against Wigan, that is this afternoon, at 6:30 in... As in around 12 minutes. If anything changes in that fixture, of course I'll let you know if any major developments occur in that fixture. Then we had La Liga action as well, where Real Madrid beat Real Sociedad 4-1. And as it stands in La Liga, Real Madrid lead Barcelona by 2 points, but that is because they have played one more match than Barcelona, who did not play in the league this weekend because they were up against Atletico Madrid in the first leg of the Copa del Rey semifinals, where they lost 4-0 to Atletico. So things heating up in the Spanish world, in the Spanish footballing world. But now we'll take a brief musical break before we get into our topic today, which is the Namibian rugby and its proposed reforming. Let's phrase it that way. But we'll be back in just a few moments where we will get into our discussion. Don't forget the number in our studio is 0832-888-401. That's 0832-888-401.
He's God of God. Takavara Makendelera. Takavara Makendelera. Oh, hi, Bush. He's God of God.
He's God of God.
Fuck the Lord. Crimea Corona. Kese viku vacho paka netinda Vacho la pungo kukasha kanepa Kamwe keshina vacho kakandina Vakwe tileni mupopilenge Ngoko pate ondeka fendela South Africa nako haka tenela Hokorola ispona petite They want to put in a dikona Baby na manda festana Uchambolo ke muskoro skoro Ame no honda betanga Walye wanda shira na jie Push, push
He's
got us
going.
He's got us going. He's got us going. Kanji free, say me, SG free.
Push, push, he's got us goro.
He's got us goro.
Takavara makendelera, takavara makendelera. Oh, hi,
push, push,
he's got us goro.
He's got us goro.
Fuck the lori, Crimea corona.
Bless you, Nati. Direzi, shit, shit.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Brought to you by PremierBet Namibia Totes. Create your account now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. PremierBet, win big, win now.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. And as I said at the top of the show today, we're going to discuss local rugby. This is on the backdrop of our national rugby side not qualifying for the World Cup for the very first time. And in this last week, they announced changes to their strategic plan, changes to how they intend to work internally for the success of the game of rugby in Namibia. And so that when the next World Cup cycle comes around, we don't fall into the situation where we don't qualify. When the next Africa Cup comes around, we don't fall into a situation where we don't win, which is what we normally do at the Africa Cup, is win, right? So the Namibia Rugby Union has a lot of work to do. And with that said, we're going to start with a conversation that we had here on the Eagle Sports Zone with Jacques Berger. We're going to listen to it just to give us an understanding of what his plan was coming in as the new head of rugby at the Namibia Rugby Union. Jacques Berger, of course, as if some of you don't know, easily our most famous rugby player, most decorated, I want to say, as well. And it is why he's now the head over there at the Namibia Rugby Union. So this discussion you're about to hear is when he was initially appointed. And so this will just give you an idea of what he had coming in. Obviously, we know how things played out during the last, let's call it, 12 to 18 months. But let's just get a refresher of what his plan was coming in. And then after that, we'll discuss how things played out and the way forward. So here's Jacques.
Yeah. No, thank you. It's my pleasure. No, I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you very much. Now, before I begin, I have to start with a bit of an apology, because when I met you on Tuesday at the press conference, it didn't register with me properly that I was talking to the Jacques Burger, because I couldn't recognize you without your long hair. And you know, growing up, I always used to see you on Super Sport and things, and even though I played soccer, the fact that you were playing overseas and you were a star overseas, it was really inspiring to me.
Thank you very much, Edie. No, don't worry at all. I'm nothing different than any other guy. Yeah, they normal. I think that's the great thing about Namibia.
Yeah.
There are no real celebrities. We're so closely connected. So no apology needed. It was nice to meet you.
Thank you. And so now, I have to ask now, in your retirement now, do you feel appreciated for the contributions you've done for Namibian rugby and sport overall? And is it like, to me, as I said, you're a legend. Is that status something tangible for you? Does it feel that way for you?
I think like I said earlier, I think in Namibia it's a very different vibe to many other countries, because rugby is an amateur sport and there are no real celebrities. But I mean, I've always received loads and loads of respect and support from the Namibian public, which is great. And through my playing days, a lot of people in the World Cups, when I was captain, so many good messages, so many positive feedbacks. And so definitely it's good to feel appreciated, good to know that people see the hard work that you put in.
Yeah.
Although there's no difference between any other player and me. If you pull over that Namibian shirt over your head, then we're all one. And I definitely, my love for the rugby will never go away. So the since I've been retired, it's always been in the back of my mind. I want to get back in. I want to put back into the Namibian rugby.
Yeah.
I want to give back in some way. Mm-hmm. And the opportunity just never really came up until just recently. So which is really exciting, and I believe something really good.
Yes, most definitely. And now, as speaking about that role that you have in your new role as a director of rugby, how does it feel for you, a former leader on the field for Namibian rugby, to now lead rugby off the field?
No, I think it's a massive responsibility. It's and it's something that I take really, really seriously, to create opportunities, as I've spoken a couple of times before.
Yeah.
To create opportunities for the youngsters and for the senior players as well. I think just to create that atmosphere of really, really being behind us.
Yeah.
I think sport, you know what sport does in the world, how it brings people together. And you see how what's done in South Africa. And I feel we're so far ahead of South Africa in the aspect of the way we live, you know, the peace we have in our country. Everybody has mutual respect for each other. If you can use all those tools,
exactly,
regardless of where you come from, what your background is, we can pull together, we can get people to the rugby, and we can talk about the rugby. We find that connection, that middle point where we can all talk together. When you meet new people, you do business together. It's just it changes so many things outside just playing the game. It's the connections you make, it's the friendships, it's the support and the atmosphere it creates in Namibia, which is such a special place in my heart. And I think for you probably as well.
Yeah.
We have so much to be grateful for, and I think if we can use all those tools, all those things that make us Namibians, we can do some really, really great things in rugby as well.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's something I talk about often on this show, is the unifying power that sport has to bring people together from different cultures, religion, and just for an hour or two, you know, everyone's the same. We're enjoying the same.
UCS customers love combos, right?
For
just $299 million, you can get 5 kilograms each of the following essential staple foods: nice rice, parboiled rice, champion super maize meal, marathon brown sugar, and marathon white sugar, plus Bokoma Fekou flour. That's 299 Namibian dollars for 5 5-kilogram essential products. Yes, we all save at USAID.
So, thinking about what was happening in the world, I mean, we watch the news, and every time I look at it, I'm so grateful to be in Namibia. It's such a great country, and I think we can use that to our advantage. I think if we can really, like I said, really pull together, and really find that middle point where we can all agree and just kind of learn more about each other. And if you're passionate, and you support the same team or the same player, then it really brings you together and then you create something special from that.
Exactly. And so, I'm not now sure exactly how much time you've had to assess and evaluate things in your new position, but if you can, for our listeners that may not know too much about Namibian rugby, could you give us a sort of an overview of the current state of Namibian rugby?
I think it's been ups and downs along the years. I started playing in 2007, I played my first World Cup.
We will continue the interview on the other side of this.
You're having guests over, so you go buy some wine. But then you stop. So many choices. Red, white, rosé, orange, orange. Rows and rows of labels with funny animals or old guys on porches. With terms like herbaceous, oxidation, acidity, terroir. You just want easy drinking. And that's exactly what you'll get with Drostehoff's range of expertly blended wines. We have an easygoing blend to suit everyone's taste. Drostehoff, welcome to our blend. Not for persons under the age of 18. Please drink responsibly.
That was a message from our friends at Drostehoff. As I promised, I will be updating you guys on the latest sports happening in the world. Manchester United is currently... Get back to Jacques and what he had to say about Namibian rugby.
We qualified for our first World Cup in 1999. Was the first time that we qualified for the World Cup since. So, if you look at the amount of rugby players we have in South Africa, it's unbelievable. So they're out of everybody's league, basically. But if you look at what we've done and what we've accomplished over the years, it's actually incredible with the amount of rugby players we have. We've got a good rugby culture, which really helps us. And like I've spoken earlier, we've got great people. We've got tough people who can endure tough times, which is important through the game. And humility. We've got humble people who for the greater cause will do whatever it takes to do something great. So I think along the years it's been ups and downs.
Yeah.
And to be honest, we're not where we're supposed to be. You know, we're far from it. And we've had the couple of World Cups that Phil Davies has been involved, I think was a really exciting period because he really set a few things in place. Although development wasn't probably on his priority within schools, within juniors, because he was from the outside and his main focus was trying to get the World Cup, to be successful at the World Cup, which is great, which is what you need. But what's really exciting about the project we've got going now is that we have worked with people who know, who we have a lot of respect for and who we know their plan works. And we've had a couple of people who haven't really been invested in Namibia, and they don't really have that connection to the people, which is tough. You know, people who come in and do a job for their own benefit. And I think the great thing now is that we have Namibians up there and we want to put back into Namibians, Namibian coaches, not just the senior coaches, but from the seniors down, make sure that every coach and every player gets the opportunity to or do his coaching level courses, as a player to play for Namibia and to compete in more competitions. That's the idea behind the whole thing. So
yeah.
At the moment, in the current state of Namibian rugby, I don't think we're in a good place. I've been saying it for the last couple of years. We're not growing. We're not getting much better. Although I think the positive thing is if we look at the amount of players that's playing professional rugby outside of Namibia is very encouraging, which mm-hmm. is great. Which means definitely there has been some good that's come out of the World Cup exposure that we've had over the years. But there's so much more that can be done in regards to development, in regards to coaching, education, in regards to more matches in Namibia, more test matches, more. There's not enough rugby from outside rugby coming into Namibia. We want to see test matches being played here with full stadiums and people coming out to support us. Like we've said earlier about that, really, that bond we can create through that.
Precisely.
And making sure that we keep track of our youngsters, you know, making sure we know where they are, what their progress is, the way they play, and keep communicating on how we can improve their skills, how we can. So we've got them in our system. If we have them in our system, we can walk a road with them, and we can constantly give them feedback and say, listen, we're looking at you. We appreciate what you're doing. You're doing well there and there and there, and this is your work on, so you can be better there. So if we can keep that communication throughout school rugby, club rugby, extremely important that we lift our level of club rugby as well, mm-hmm. So we can get our players to trainings, make sure that if we strengthen our own league, then it's going to be massively beneficial for the rest of Namibian rugby as well.
Exactly. No, I very much appreciate your honesty in answering that question.
It's a pleasure.
And now changing lanes a bit now, my topic of conversation on the show today is about sports as an economy. And so now, as someone who's played professional rugby for basically over 10 years in South Africa, France, and England, what are some traits that you've seen in the rugby systems over there that you noticed as a player that allow them to run fully professional rugby leagues?
I think the first thing, you need the right people. You need the right people to drive the whole plan. People with people who are selfless, you know, people who want to do it for the greater good.
Yeah.
People who really want to put in and put back into Namibian rugby itself. So I'm talking about rugby specifically, but whatever club or country you're involved in, is people who want to put back. And then you need the finances. You need the backing of your locals. So every sport will get a funding from World Rugby or FIFA, or whatever the case may be, the governing body. You'll get a fee, or you'll get a amount of money to develop and to do things.
Yeah.
But we've never really had the backing. We've had a couple of people already that we're really appreciative of. Don't get me wrong, but there's just not been enough backing from the locals. You know, the local local sponsors, and I understand that. You know, they want to see results. It's nothing. It's not focused on them. It's not their fault. We need to make sure that your house is in order. Our house is in order, and people will see that, and people will want to get involved in that.
Exactly.
So I think money and good people. If we can use the funds well in the right areas, and make sure that the funds go to the right places, which is extremely important. And obviously, getting the backing of sponsors and having the right people with the right views and the right outsets to do things, something really special.
No, I fully agree with that. And now it's well known that on a local level that our players, most of, if not all of them, would have a separate job during the day and then play rugby in the night and so on. What do you think are some of the things that we need to do to get to a stage where playing rugby is seen as a profession where people can earn, or players can earn, a livable wage?
I think it goes hand in hand with the previous question. I think if we have the finances, and again, if we can manage the money right,
yeah,
we need to make sure. Basically, I think our main challenge now as well with this national team is getting guys to play to trainings. You know, and that's a very basic part of sport. You know, you need to get your guys to training. To make sure we're well conditioned, we work extremely hard, make sure that we're well prepared when it's time to play. But with the economic climate right now, it's so tough to get guys to trainings on their own pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to generate the funds so we can help people, help players get to trainings, help them with the right nutrition, like after training, make sure they get the best treatment, injury treatment wise, mm-hmm. Recovery for training, and it shouldn't cost them anything. I think that is the area that we need to work on. That's to help them with the cost of playing rugby. And eventually, when everything's in place, if you can create a semi or a professional setup where you can contract players, you constantly have them in the high performance center where you can monitor them and keep working with them and grow your players in that way and pay them a salary.
Yeah.
That's obviously the ultimate dream and goal, but that we're still a while away from there, but that's definitely something we're aiming towards, and hopefully in the near future we can get there.
No, most definitely. And my last question for you today, Jacques, is what are you looking forward to the most in your new position as the director of rugby?
What I'm looking forward to the most is I want to see young Namibian kids. I want to hear them say, I want to play for Namibia. Yeah. I want to play for Namibia, not play for the Springboks or play for the All Blacks. I want to hear them say, listen, I'm extremely proud. I want to play for Namibia. I want to wear that shirt.
Yeah.
And to see people in stadiums support us, see people having a positive influence on communities, hear people talk, inspiring the youngsters, inspiring every rugby player throughout the country. And if we can do that and really create a pride and where we have a country where we support our rugby team and our football team and our cricket team, all our sport codes, and really, really support us well,
yeah,
then I think we've done well. Then I think it's up to the way we play and the way we run things, and I know that. We have to play in a way that people get inspired, where they say and they watch it and say, listen, we might not have won today, but geez, these boys, I mean, they put in their absolute everything. And the girls as well. Obviously, yeah. Girls rugby also growing in world stage massively in Namibia as well. It's becoming more and more popular in all different codes. But that's the main thing. I think the dream is to have people, to see kids in the street walking around with Namibian shirts or whatever the case may be, and waving that flag proudly and supporting us on weekends and planning your weekend around the rugby. I mean, that's the ultimate dream. I think having big test matches in Namibia,
yeah,
where we play tier one, tier two, top countries and yeah, really getting a good outcome, I think is probably something that I'm really looking forward to. And making, I think, just making a difference, having a positive influence when you walk away from the game, whenever the time may be, that you leave something behind that's worth something that lasts for a long time to come. So I think that's the main dream.
Most definitely. I share your sentiments, and I wish you the best of luck in your new position. I'm confident that you'll do well, and just thank you again for making time for us today.
No, thank you as well. I just want to say, I mean, the Namibian public, we're going to do our absolute best to make you guys proud. We're going to work extremely hard. And please support us. Have faith in us. We'll make sure that when we're out there, when we represent Namibia, we'll make you guys proud. So thank you again for all your support, all your messages I've received over the couple of days. We're gonna really make you guys proud.
Most definitely, we're right behind you, Doc.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Brought to you by Premier Bet Namibia Totes. Create your account now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. Premier Bet, win big, win now.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. That was the conversation we had with the director of rugby over at the Namibia Rugby Union at the start of last season, yes, at the start of last season. And in retrospect, you know, as I was listening to him speak again, obviously they fell short of their ultimate goal, which was to qualify for the World Cup, but I think in several other areas they fell short as well, which is why they came up with this restructuring. We'll try our best to get them back in here to talk about if they achieved things like, you know, being able to track their youngsters, if they achieve things like being able to better support their athletes when it comes to transportation, when it comes to nutrition. And if they were able to really develop the grassroots system that he was talking about, local development. Would be great if we were able to get such figures, but fear not, we will do our best to get them in if they are willing to speak on this. Now, to the next person from the union that we will get insight from is the CEO of the Namibia Rugby Union. This is Mr. John Haynes, who also gave us some insight. This was midway through last year. So let's hear about the state of Namibian rugby from the CEO of the union, that is John Haynes.
CEO of the Namibia Rugby Union, Mr. John Haynes. Thank you very much for joining us today. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing well. Under the circumstances, being winter, I'm not going to complain. Thank you.
Yeah, of course, of course. So let's get right into it. If you could briefly introduce yourself and tell us what led you to the position of the CEO of the Namibia Rugby Union.
Well, everyone knows my name, John Haynes, CEO of the Namibia Rugby Union. My background in sport, management, administration, with a strong passion comes with a background of being involved previously with cricket in Namibia. Mm-hmm. And the journey has basically been years and years of involvement from a development office, becoming a coach and then an administrator. And yes, so I understand the whole mechanism when it comes to grassroots, from grassroots to governance level.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So if you could briefly share, what does the day-to-day of an NRU CEO look like?
Now, this is quite interesting. It's a balance of your strategic planning. Mm-hmm. It's also stakeholder engagement. Mm-hmm. And as well, it's managing operations and aligning the national teams, competitions, development, high performance. All those goals needs to be well-balanced.
Mm-hmm. So now, speaking of those goals, in your time as the CEO, what has been a positive area of development or change that you've seen?
Well, I would rather say it's more of nothing. As I would say, changes shouldn't be seen as what has changed from day to night. Mm-hmm. I mean, the love of the game always will remain in place.
Yeah.
So it was basically improving the governance structures, mm-hmm. Obviously with the support of the store, not improving but strengthening rather, mm-hmm. and also that changing the major positive minds, I would say mindset shift in the support, mm-hmm. and just trying to build a stronger brand.
Excellent. So we've been covering the 2025 season. What are your thoughts on the season we've had?
Well, I would say the competition has been well contested. I mean, we've been spoiled with the quality of promising local talent. And then, we're not going to overlook the increase of the fan engagement or the fan base. Mm-hmm. And especially if you have to look at the coast and the north, mm-hmm. as also with the new competition structure, also basically injected almost like that revival of fan engagement, yeah, and the growth of the love of the game, yeah.
Now, speaking of the fanfare, I think it's safe to say rugby and football sort of neck and neck, maybe even could argue that rugby on average gets more supporters. But for example, we see the Kudu supporters, as you mentioned, always filling up the stands every weekend. In your view, what is it about the game of rugby that resonates so heavily with Namibians?
I would say it's rugby has always been seen as a sport, mm-hmm. that's loved by a diverse community. And do we want to compare to other sport codes? I would rather say that each sport code has its place within Namibia. Mm-hmm. But I also strongly feel that we should have a cross collaboration, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. where we, I've made a comment yesterday that look at the Sundowns and the Blue Bulls,
yeah.
coexisting in exactly. the same stadium.
Yeah.
So we need to basically, that is how we basically should share those, rather work on a collaboration. Yeah.
No, just following up on that collaboration.
Alright, so we had a call on the line. If you'd like to call back, the number in the studio is 0832-888-401. As I let the conversation with Mr. John Haynes continue, do call back 0832-888-401.
Has there been any communication with the NFA in regards to this, or is this something that's still very much in the beginning stages?
That's in the beginning stages. Yeah. We've basically both sport codes has been working. I mean, we've recently supported with the hosting of the COSAFA under 17s mm-hmm. Girls tournament, mm-hmm. And hopefully we will be able to see the Brave Warriors playing a few months from now in Namibia. So are we doing, can we coexist in the same ecosystem as sport in Namibia? Yes.
Yeah.
And there are collaborations or reach out, communication and engagement.
And that's very, very interesting there. Now, getting back to Kudus, what do you think they're doing differently to the other clubs to gain such support? Because, you know, I ask this question because we also see in other sports that there's always like a select group of teams that have quite significantly larger support than others. So what do you think Kudus in particular are doing differently to get so many supporters behind them?
Well, I will not want to categorize them as what they do differently.
Mm-hmm.
So it's what are the successes? What mm-hmm. are they basically doing?
Mm-hmm.
There is also something that other clubs are starting to do, basically, if you look at the social media platform.
Mm-hmm.
Their fan engagement is not just under their at the field.
Yeah.
It is what happens before and after.
Yeah.
Eagle fan. Oh, 0832888401 is the line in the studio. You're welcome to call back.
That. And that's building a strong culture, identity within your community. And basically that is...
Eagle FM, hello?
Yes, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right, my brother.
Yes.
Yeah, you say you are talking about the economy and what?
Today we're talking about rugby.
You're still talking about rugby?
Yes, yes.
On the, when the person is retired, because I just heard the interview which we were having previous one.
Yeah.
The recorded one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think rugby, especially when it comes to Namibia, they are doing well.
Yeah.
Because, mostly it's being supported by our colored people and the white people.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like one-sided and it's well-funded.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to grooming, even, you can see that the small boys, they have been taken care. They've been sent it even like to go to for trials in South Africa, you name it.
Yeah.
But apart from that, when you check at the soccer, it's totally different. And I'm always having opinion when it comes to rugby because it's very, very sad with the way we are allocated the resource only one part of the country. Like rugby, maybe only in Windhoek and Vast Bay, Swakop, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
Marinda are gone. But in the north, there's nothing happening. And you come also to Katutura. Not even a single Hebrew stadium in Katutura.
Yeah.
But you want to tell me that our black people, they are not interested to play.
Yeah.
They want to participate, but the problem is they are not given a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And the Minister of Sport was also, they are not advocating for it.
So in your opinion, there's a racial issue?
Very much.
Mm.
And this is what I'm saying. We want to put people together. We send one Namibia, one nation. But the thing which we do is already having a question mark. You never see white people turning up even to Chura Chura in African style match. Never. Not even in Kalaled from Komazda. But when it comes to rugby, my friend, everybody's there. Doesn't matter black or what. They are there. They are there to support. Because they are going there because of the son of their boss who owned the company is playing.
Mm.
So black folks are also forced to go there. You see? But for me, I think we need to do much.
Yeah.
There's a lot of we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it comes to Katutura, we're neglecting those people. Not even a 10 score, just imagine. They all got to Tura, my friend, how big is? Not even a 10 score, which is there.
Don't they have one at the youth center?
Youth center, which one? The one where the school foot are sleeping.
Yeah, the one where one economy
behind,
is.
Behind the complex one.
Yeah.
No, not really, because not even that one is critical. Not to tell me that you are allowing your daughter to go there every day.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
There's no security. You see now.
Yeah.
It's one of the things which you need to also to concern about it.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, this is the same thing when you're talking about even swimming pool. So everyone is losing. And it's not safe. The moment the kid is swimming there, the trousers and everything is gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is how. First of all, I think we need to introduce in the school, and they must be just priority to our school who are participating, especially in the window school. If they are having a soccer, football in their school, and they also can have rugby, they can also have cricket, they can have also white hockey, all those. Because if I'm not good in hockey, then maybe I'm good in volleyball. But those things are not happening. Even in marathon, some of the school, they don't play in a soccer pitch.
Yeah.
And you are here telling people, no, we need to be, what? To become a professional. It's very hard to do that.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, but because we need to start from the grassroots. Once we have a strong grassroots, my friend, we can qualify for World Cup even in soccer.
Mm-hmm.
If capable, they can do it. What about us? And the problem also I'm also advocating is that with the diplomat, we really don't know what is their aim, what is they are doing. If you look at those players who are playing for Cape Verde, because of their diplomat in France,
yeah.
They keep those boys playing in the academy for France, somewhere in the UK, but we have a diplomat who I don't know really. You never heard even the one from those kind of like a jump or whatever. Maybe we can send our people who are good in marathon. Nothing happening, my friend. I remember the other time it was Chongarelo when it was about sports commission that time. And it was not really produced a fruit trace. But I think if we can do it with the soccer, we can do it with the rugby, so many, even our cricket and so on.
And netball.
We can go, netball, we can go far.
Yeah.
But when I'm looking at things, no, man. And the thing of allocating also resources, like when it comes to quotas, we need to start thinking of clubs. Like, Toronto is doing well, but you can see that it's just somebody's money invested.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you give them quotas, they will start doing well. More. They even start participating in what? African Cup Championship. But you cannot participate because you just made a low price for just a full of players. You cannot even afford it. You see? But seriously, I think instead of giving individuals who are going to buy their laptops with quota of fees, we must allocate this quota of fees to association, like a soccer, you name it, rugby, and the people can start to be paid a good salary.
Yeah.
They're able to pay men, they're able to pay even their school kids' fees, they're able to send their cousin to university. But you can know, it's just a player, but a player, it's really meaningless. Once you retire, you don't have anything to follow back. And it's what is happening in Namibia.
Yeah.
Okay, my brother, unless you have a question on...
do you watch local rugby? Do you have a rugby team?
You are saying what?
Do you have a rugby team, a local rugby team?
Rugby team?
Yeah,
I only know the one, those one for Komaza, Dolphin, not Dolphin, it's what? Falcon.
Oh, Real Falcon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I my two friends who are playing there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because mostly I play only soccer. And even if I went to play for professional, because I was playing for PA.
Okay.
I played the piece.
Alright.
Yeah.
No, thank you for calling.
Anyway, it's good, my friend. Alright, thanks, yeah?
Alright.
Yes.
Yes, that was the caller. We'll be back on the other side of this short commercial break.
Win big, win now with Premier Bet Namibia Totes. Get a 200% sports bonus of up to 2,000 Namibian dollars. Sign up now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. Premier Bet, win big, win now. Premier Bet, win big, win now. Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. The caller brought us some interesting points there, especially about, he touched on something that, you know, I try not to delve too much into because of, there's often more than what meets the eye, but he touched on the racial element. And I hear where he's coming from with what he said, but at the same time, I don't fully agree with it as well. Simply because if you watch a local rugby game, you will see that it's not completely, like as the caller put it, a completely white sport or completely colored sport. I think it's adequately diverse. Let me put it like that. So, not saying that that's not a component at all, but I don't think it weighs as heavy as the caller put it in when he was giving his views. But if you'd like us to chime in more on that, you're welcome to. Call in at 083-288-401. Now let's just finish this conversation with John Haynes and then we'll get in touch with our local rugby expert, our in-house rugby expert, that is Mr. Dwight Lynx.
We should not miss the importance of investing in youth and the visibility that drives the loyalty and the support of a fan.
Yeah.
So how are we going to attract a fan?
Yeah.
We as the mother body needs to also do the same.
Mm-hmm.
How do we attract our fans?
Yeah.
How do we get, and that's a nice terminology to use, bums on seats.
It's
what can we do to serve our community and that will draw them to the game.
Most definitely, most definitely. And so lastly on the league season, this is now a two-part question. There was no sponsor for the league this year. Are you able to share what some of the challenges were in getting a sponsor? And I ask this question specifically because, at least from the outside looking in, you know, rugby seems to be a sport that really doesn't
well, before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. Had a slight technical glitch there, but what I wanted to get to was when the CEO spoke about the funding that they receive from the Namibia Rugby, the World Rugby, which is the international governing body of the sport of rugby. He spoke about, he got into the differences between
how much a country like Namibia gets from World Rugby versus how much a country like New Zealand or South Africa gets from World Rugby. And he spoke about some of the misconceptions that, that the NRU often deals with, you know, when they obviously didn't qualify for this upcoming one, but the previous World Cups they've been to, many people would ask, oh, why are they traveling with so many people? They're not doing anything with the money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he kind of dispelled some myths in that regard and gave some insight into exactly what the money is used for, that the little money that they do receive, little in comparison to the other nations that they do receive, what it goes towards, and basically said that it goes towards operations, right? It goes towards things like physios, which they don't have enough of. It goes towards things like nutritionists, which they don't have enough of, and so on. But with that said, I'll now read you the statement that the Namibia Rugby Union released that is titled, NRU current status and reset and rebuilding strategy. This is for the years 2026 to 2031. Okay. So it goes as follows. The Namibian Rugby Union is currently navigating a transition phase following the conclusion of the Rugby World Cup 2027 qualification cycle. The union confirms that Namibia did not qualify for the Rugby World Cup. As a result, World Rugby High Performance Funding, which is linked to participation in the Rugby World Cup program, has been adjusted in line with the applicable funding framework. That's a fancy way of saying that their funding has been reduced, right? Then it goes on to say, this change in funding has required the union to reassess its high performance structures and overall financial planning to ensure sustainability and alignment with available resources. So, in other words, they're going to figure out how they're going to do their job with less money. The Namibia Rugby Union recognizes the heightened public interest and commentary surrounding recent developments within the union. The NRU affirms that its governance and executive structures remain in place and fully operational, and that the union continues to function in accordance with its constitutional, regulatory, and international obligations. In other words, they've been hearing the chatter from the public, the displeasure from the public in them qualifying, and yeah, that's the fancy way of saying that. As a part of the post-qualification review and funding realignment process, changes have occurred within the union's high-performance environment. These developments followed the conclusion of the Rugby World Cup qualification cycle and the associated adjustment of high-performance funding. The NRU emphasizes that these matters arose from broader structural and funding considerations rather than individual or performance related issues. Yeah, I'll leave that there. The NRU wishes to place on record that all engagements during this process have been conducted professionally and in good faith. The union remains committed to respectful, transparent, and constructive relationships with all coaches and technical personnel as it enters the rebuilding phase. Operational continuity has been maintained, and the NRU confirms that it remains compliant with its national and international obligations. I mean, okay, we'll leave that there as well. In parallel, it continues. In parallel with these developments, the union has completed an internal review of its governance structures, operational systems, high-performance environment, competitions, development pathways, and financial position. The review highlighted the need for structural strengthening to support long-term growth, sustainability, and competitive relevance, while also confirming the strong foundation provided by Namibia's rugby community, athletes, and stakeholders. The union acknowledges calls from within the rugby community for increased engagement, clarity, and communication. As part of the reset and rebuilding strategy, the NRU is strengthening its governance, reporting, and stakeholder communication processes to support transparency, accountability, and the trust across the rugby ecosystem. So one wonders why that didn't happen before, but glad they've put it on paper here for the public. And so part of the reset and rebuilding strategy is built on five integrated pillars, the statement says. The first one being governance, leadership, and institutional reform. Under this, they say strengthening governance and management systems to ensure accountability, transparency, and professional delivery across all levels of the union. Now, I didn't see their previous strategy, but I would like to think that was an existing one. Second, they say financial sustainability and commercial growth. Stabilizing the union's financial position through improved financial management and diversified sustainable revenue streams. I would have loved to be able to ask what that entails. It continues to say reducing reliance on performance-linked funding cycles. So in other words, they want to generate revenue that isn't attached to whether they win or lose. Third, they say high performance and national pathway rebuild. Resetting national pathways to support long-term player and coach development within a realistic, sustainable, and internationally aligned framework. Now, this is one I've heard about now for a few years. So I'd like to think this was also an existing one. It's basically what Jacques alluded to. Competitions and participation growth. That's number four. Restructuring competitions to better support development objectives, participation growth, and player progression across all levels of the game. Number five, they say development, transformation, and community impact. Reaffirming rugby as a platform for inclusion, development, and positive social impact across Namibia with a strong focus on grassroots growth and women's participation. Again, really all things that we've heard, not only the union, but really all federations in Namibia basically have this template of operation. And then the statement concludes with, the Namibia Rugby Union acknowledges that recent outcomes represent a challenging period for both the union and the broader rugby community. However, the NIU remains firmly committed to a disciplined, transparent, and measured rebuilding process. The 2026 to 2031 period will focus on institutional stabilization, sustainable commercial growth, aligned development pathways, and progressive performance improvement over successive competition cycles. That was the short of it, or the long of it, rather. So now, with that said, let's get in touch with none other than Dwight Links, who will break the statement down for us and give us some further insight into exactly what's going on. We'll be right back.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honoreta Time, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileco, Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Batatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, the Eye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. I'm now joined by our very own Dwight Links. Dwight, how are you doing this evening?
I'm okay, and you on your side, HD?
I'm doing well. You sound a bit somber.
No, I was just reading a bit. That's all.
Okay. So, Dwight, today we're on the Eagle Sports Zone. We're talking about the Namibia Rugby Union. I'm sure you're aware they released sort of a restructuring statement.
Yes. Saw that happening during this past week.
Yeah.
Which was potentially the big question that many people would have wanted answered after late last year's, the final opportunity that we lost in Dubai when we lost to Belgium and then lost subsequently to Samoa.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we didn't know that, you know, Belgium had the particular caliber that they had, where almost the starting 15 itself.
Yeah,
were players that played professional rugby in the French second division,
mm-hmm.
and we you know, you could count our professional guys on your hands, and then literally see that it was literally a mismatch that we walked into in game one. So yeah, it was a question that anyone would anticipate in terms of, okay, so what happens now after October 2025?
Yeah. So before we get into the statement itself, give us your, as a rugby fan, just purely as a rugby fan, what are your thoughts on Namibia not qualifying for the World Cup for the first time?
In terms of looking at the path for the past, let's say three World Cups since the 2017, was it 2017? There was a 2015, 2019. Yeah. So the past three World Cups.
Yeah.
Up to 2023, things were looking a bit, were looking shaky, to be honest, HG, because you could see that we were continuously, we weren't graduating from a certain level, and we always had to sort of like reprove our status, which was a given. I mean, we can't act entitled, even though we were the only African team other than South Africa who could qualify for the Rugby World Cup every 5 years. It's just that we continuously had these nail-biting matches, you know, these matches where we were continuously literally pushed to a limit, and then we had to rebound in the second half of the same match and then prove ourselves every time. And you could also see that we had to continuously depend upon players, certain players that were pro at certain levels. At one stage, it was Jacques Burger before he retired. It was him and what was the other guy's name? For the past four World Cups, it was what was the guy's name? The guy that went from Potchefstroom, not Potchefstroom, from Pretoria University. What was his name? The number 10 that we had for a long time. And we had to depend on these players. And then there was also the big mismatch in terms of what I saw in the 2011 World Cup, where the team that actually took us to New Zealand in 2011. Literally, like the survivors, the guys that carried us there, we took only two or three of those players, which was also a big, I felt it was a big betrayal primarily of how how some of those players that carried us through, that were development players, never actually got the opportunity to go and represent us at the big scale, in New Zealand. And we showed up with players that I never knew we had, guys that was scattered across the world.
Yeah.
And now, you know, we literally lost all five matches we could have beaten Fiji. And if you ever had the opportunity, HD, of watching that 2011 World Cup that was held in New Zealand.
Yeah.
We could have beaten Fiji. We were at a level with Fiji where we could literally still compete with Fiji in a match for 80 minutes.
Yeah.
And now Fiji is busy playing Super Rugby with New Zealand and Australia players, them and the Samoan players and the Tongan players. And now those guys have literally stepped up a level themselves.
Yeah.
And that's what you can continuously see for the past 10, 15 years now, that we are still stuck in a certain level that we can't break out of. We can't prove ourselves year in, year out. And that's also help and assist, you know, the players that we've got or the player base we had. And we are now literally rebuilding, even and I'm agreeing with even the strategy that the executives outlined on Thursday, that we need to rebuild to something. So it'll be interesting to see how that rebuilding takes place.
So what I'm getting from you is that this failure to qualify is something that was building up. It wasn't a surprise.
Yeah, it was just about when this disappointment would come through.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we saw this in 2025. I mean, the last World Cup, which was where was that World Cup? Was it France? Yeah, the last World Cup of France.
Yeah.
Also the people, that there were players there that never represented Namibia, which you know, if any rugby-loving fan of Namibia would ask a fundamental question, if you see professional teams pick the players that performed very well in their seasons and pick the players that got them into qualifying, why is Namibia selecting university students that no one knew about who play in the South African University Leagues, or picking players that never played club rugby in Namibia,
mm-hmm.
and who potentially stand the chance. You know, you just need to nurture them a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But they stand the chance of technically also being, you know, scoring a big contract internationally if they play for Namibia at a World Cup level.
Mm-hmm.
And then every time we pick players that no one has heard of, every time we pick players that you don't understand, will this guy still play? Look, don't get me wrong. Someone like, what was that guy's name? Arnos Kutsira,
yeah.
from the Cheetahs franchise.
Mm-hmm.
He's obviously pro, but he's at the end of his career, mm-hmm. technically with the Cheetahs. The same with Thorsten van Jaarsveld. We had to go. I didn't know that Thorsten still played rugby. I thought he retired after the last World Cup, which was 2 years, 3 years that direction in 2023, because we took him to 2023 as well.
Uh-huh.
And I keep forgetting. I keep remembering the fly off that we've been picking for the past 4 World Cups. Tiens, what was the guy's name? Tiens Kotze. Yeah, Tiens Kotze. He played in the Varsity League in South Africa for the University of Pretoria. And look, the thing with Tiens is, we don't regularly see how Tiens performs. Obviously, the technical team and the management would know how he performs every time that we selected him for a World Cup. There's nothing wrong with him.
Mm.
It's just we never developed a backup for him as well.
Yeah.
Now we've got Cliven Loebscher, but I don't know. It's either he's available or it's either he's not. And we're also not developing a team base of saying, listen, if local guys have the opportunity of coming through, expose them to the international level as much as possible. So it's yes, the quid to your question.
Mm-hmm.
And we obviously saw 2025 being that specific answer.
Yeah, no, it's a very interesting situation, because from what it sounds like, and especially from your account, is that it seems that there's, a bias towards, like, if you play outside Namibia, you're automatically in the team, which on paper, I mean, would kind of make sense, because, I mean, you wouldn't be playing outside Namibia if you didn't have any talent. But from what it sounds like from your perspective, is some of these guys, yeah, maybe they play outside, but they're not very useful for the national side.
I mean, actually, if you even look at, what's the loose forward, who plays in Australia professional rugby. What's his name? Something Hargreaves.
Mm-hmm.
Hargreaves, how he got citizenship was primarily with the last World Cup, the 2023 World Cup. Remember that new law changes that World Rugby brought in, the one that said if you hadn't played for one country that you had played for before, if you hadn't played for like 3 years or 2 years, you weren't called up to their team. You automatically stand the chance of being reselected for another country that you can also qualify to become a citizen of, or you have some sort of citizenship rights to, which obviously meant that a whole bunch of the Samoan players that were playing for the All Blacks, who were no longer picked again, decided to show up for Samoa, the same too for Tonga, the same too for some. There was a Scottish guy that we could pick for 2023 as a fullback. I forgot his name as well.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew we had such particular links. And then we picked this guy from Australia that played for the Western Force. I only know his surname is Hargreaves. And I never knew that he could literally be picked. Obviously, these rule changes kicked in. And obviously, as a Namibian, you assume, you know, we're not that prestigious in terms of our identity. We are a serial participant of the Rugby World Cups.
Yeah.
But we're not that prestigious that we can pull a Super Rugby player that plays in Australia rugby,
mm-hmm.
or a Scottish professional player that has that plays what's that competition? The South Africans joined the URC,
mm-hmm.
United Rugby Championship, because he played for the Glasgow or the Edinburgh team, one of the two. And suddenly we had options, you know. Namibia suddenly has options.
Yeah.
It would have been fun to know or to acknowledge that Hargreaves was part of the qualification processes every time Namibia goes and plays in the Africa Cup, mm-hmm. the Afrika Partes Africa Cup. And even that Scottish player, they are up for selection. They can participate in playing, you know, and competing mm-hmm. against these various levels. But obviously, you know, if you're a pro, you don't want to get a weird injury playing against either semi-amateur or semi-pro players from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
If you now say you're going to go play for Namibia somewhere on the African continent. And many times we have to fly to, it's either Abidjan of the Ivory Coast, or we've got to fly to to Harare was last year.
Yeah,
but there was a scenario where we also had to fly somewhere here to the east coast of Africa, and it's at all these particular scenarios, and these rugby players, these pro guys, have got a lot of insurance money on them because their unions insure them, and their coaches tell them, hey, listen, this is not a high profile match, we don't know what the situation will be. So I get and I understand the one scenario. The other scenario, in terms of picking players that we don't know of, It really doesn't help our particular brand of rugby, picking players that didn't help us with the qualification process.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a trend Namibia has to learn from. It's a trend we've got to drop very quickly.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you. And before now we get to like talking about the statement itself, can you share what you know about the grassroots level of rugby? What does that environment look like in Namibia in particular? Cause, we had Jack on here about a year, maybe two, 2024, end of 2024 is when he got his appointment, right?
Mm.
And one of his big talking points and main goals was to improve that pathway from grassroots to the national side. So can you share as a local rugby fan, what does the grassroots environment look like in Namibia? And in your view, is there a clear pathway from grassroots to national team?
It's actually a very good question, because there's a template that's currently now proving good grassroots development that leads to potential career development. Literally, you can earn money from it. And you and I, we've spoken a lot to the Cricket Namibia guys about that.
Yeah.
And we are impressed because we don't know something like this. And primarily this, what's also contained in the statement, obviously, and like you said, we'll get to it, seems that they want to replicate what Cricket Namibia is doing,
mm-hmm.
meaning develop a strong base. And we had the strong base in the 90s. And the 3 years that I tried playing club rugby,
yeah.
there was also a lot of talent available, meaning there were Namibians. I'm telling you, actually, there were Namibians that they wanted to play club rugby. And then obviously I saw one of the particular downsides of playing club rugby in Namibia. So that's now the next step. If you come from high school, you go into club rugby, and then at club rugby, potentially you sustain this particular, and you can consider it a hobby, even with Namibian football and even with various other particular, amateur approaches that we've got to sport in Namibia, is that
yeah.
the unfortunate thing is, you have to treat it like a hobby, and it's a hobby, unfortunately, that can leave you with an injury here and there,
mm-hmm.
or with a few scars here and there. And you later on realize it's not a sustainable activity. Reason being, for example, in the one season that I played for Polytechnic, obviously before they now changed their name to NUST back in 2006,
mm-hmm.
when I played club rugby for them, was that I almost picked up a elbow injury, meaning I almost broke my elbow. I definitely got a rib injury. I couldn't participate in the quarterfinals of the reserve league.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're a new club, you start at the lowest league position, and then you've got to build yourself up in terms of reaching the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the injuries at that stage, when you review, because I was a university student, you go and review the particular sort of like medical assistance policy that your institute has as a student, and just to realize that at that stage, back then, if you picked up knee injuries, so I'm talking about ligament damage injuries, and rugby players are susceptible to ligament, knee ligament injury, ankle ligament injuries, and then you've got your, what's the other injury they get? You know, and then the regular muscle, the muscle tear and muscle strain injuries, that also come through. Yeah. The rib injuries now today are very few and far, but it's either concussion, meaning a knock against the head, and the ligament injuries of your knees and ankles. And when you go and review at that stage in 2006, we went and reviewed, you know, what medical coverage does the institute provide you as a student who's playing a sport on behalf of the institute. They were only willing to cover 1,500 of that.
Okay.
And back in 2006, if you had ligament damage and muscle strains and stuff like that that actually required an operation, we were talking about minimum 20,000 out of your pocket.
Mm.
And, you know, you could only get 1,500. At the other rugby clubs, HD, was a picture primarily of that these guys had to pay because if you had a job and you were a working person, your medical aid would not easily cover those injuries because your employer would tell you, literally, you did not pick up this. This is not a regular flu, and this is not an injury that, you know, you picked up at work or, you know, a scenario specifically contained towards you just being at home and you pick up this injury. You were doing something in your time, not related to the work, and thus, this is money you've got to pay out of your pocket. And it literally pushes a lot of talent that we could have nurtured. It pushes them away. So firstly, your grassroots program immediately gets drained because the economics does not fit the particular activity.
Yeah.
A second picture was also that obviously you are hearing that many of the guys that wanted to play rugby, you know, it was an unsustainable activity. You have to eat three times more than the average person just to gain the weight. Literally, you literally have to do that.
Yeah.
The downside was, that's a lot of money to spend on food. And that's just one person.
Mm.
Because as a rugby player, you have to eat at least five times a day, HD. It's serious. It's not a joke.
Mm-hmm.
The footballers, even the professional footballers, are told that they've got to, you know, maintain muscle mass and energy levels at all times. For rugby players, you've got to gym early, or you had to start gymming, even if you hated gymming. I was someone that hated gymming because that was not, you know, that was something that really didn't fit in terms of what the game demanded. The game is more a game of endurance. And the strength aspects you've got to develop while playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, and all these things that I'm mentioning to you were, you know, various economic aspects that fit into how you achieve high-performance rugby talent within the ecosystem that you wish to maintain. I mean, none of us are like the Polynesians from New Zealand and Australia,
yeah,
who literally develop that mass. You know, they are naturally big, or we don't have as many players specifically that wish to participate, even though they might have the body size in Namibia. A lot of them would say, hey, listen, we don't like the injuries and the scale of injuries that rugby players endure in the Namibian landscape as much, and not for doing it for fun.
Yeah.
So, there's, in terms of a grassroots situation, we had the talent. We are losing the talent. I'm still surprised that the grassroots for school level is so resilient. You remember the time that we attended that the women's qualifying event that happened at Cricket Namibia's cricket field,
mm-hmm.
And then I think it was you or another guy that said, "Can you believe that that's school sports or school rugby at the Hagegaingob Stadium?" With all the teachers, with all the parents and schools that were supporting the players on a Friday night, or was it a Thursday night? But it was really something good to see that particular tradition is still ongoing.
Yeah.
The downside is now you don't see it transfer into the club rugby. And the club rugby, the few matches and tournaments that I attended last year, at the National Stadium itself,
mm-hmm.
is a little bit disappointing because there is some serious talent there, but not all of them make it into the national team.
Yeah.
And not all the talent ultimately has the means of being selected for the national team. So yeah, it's a sketchy picture. It's a shaky picture as well, primarily mm-hmm. because you've got to ask, will the talent still be there this year? The same talent
mm-hmm.
that played for us, that represented us in Dubai last year, will they still be able to play? It's now the Premier League.
Yeah.
And will they still be selected for national team duties?
Most definitely. And as I was listening to you speak, you know, before I had you on, now we had a caller come on air, basically not alluding. He plainly said it, that there's a racial component to the support that rugby gets, you know, in comparison to other sports. Their point was that, you know, that certain communities support rugby more financially and in numbers when they go to the stands and so on. Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring that up now is because as I'm hearing you speak, we're talking about the grassroots. But when we talk about grassroots in rugby, I feel like we're talking about schools like Vintage Gymnasium, Uvea S, you know, all those kind of schools that where school
that
rugby
play the sport, yeah.
Yeah, school rugby is a big thing.
Yeah.
So if you can you touch on that that dynamic? Is it a racial thing or is it a socioeconomic thing? Or what exactly is the seemingly issue?
It's actually both, HD. The caller is right, but ultimately the caller also doesn't do a little bit of introspection in terms of looking at, would they be willing to go to their son's football match on a Wednesday afternoon, you know, between 2:30 and 5 to go and support their son?
Mm.
I mean, it's you can bounce that particular same statement and question back to any community in across the country. Doesn't matter what skin color or what particular ethnicity, and you can ask them back, are you willing to go and support your son and daughter while they go and represent their school at whichever particular sports scenario?
Yeah.
As a kid, I didn't like it when my mom wanted to support us, on Saturdays and stuff like that. You know, because you're not used to it in some scenarios. But I mean, I see my brothers pitch up for their sons and their daughters at when they do school sports events.
Yeah.
Cheer for them, and then you know, it's something that you help the child with. And then when the child then starts getting into their teen or teenage years, it then becomes a scenario where you start seeing that the child or the teenager is actually, do they fit into the sport? Does the sport work for them?
Mm-hmm.
So this can be anything from swimming, because I know that it's only the private schools in Windhoek that have swimming programs. The public schools don't have swimming programs. And then, which they actually teach the children to be able to swim. You know, you get basic swimming skills.
Yeah.
I know my one brother's stepson and, his two daughters are excellent swimmers. And I don't want to swim, HD, but that's because of a personal thing that happened to me. You know, as a kid, there are certain trauma elements that you can't get over.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to my other brother's niece. Ozzy's daughter, my other brother's daughter, my niece, she's one of the youngest, and she's also got, you know, adequate swimming, and he's supporting her in that particular endeavor. So it's a discussion of, as a parent, you can look at this from as young as the child starts playing the sport to advanced level in high school, how that support function permeates through. Mm. With the parents, literally will stay with the same car, but they will buy the kid, you know, or they will buy the child the latest sports equipment to assist them in their training, ensure that there's every month there's some sort of an allowance, you know, associated to attending their various sports meets. And I mean, we even have one of our colleagues, I don't want to mention her, but her child that is, her daughter that's a gymnast. And you can, that's the kind of mentality that parents must have. It's something that you as a parent, you, you go and support at every function, at every particular meeting, at every engagement. That literally is the kind of discussion. So if the caller made that particular claim, he is right in one regard, but it's actually something that has to come from a community, from a household, from a family setting.
Mm-hmm.
You got to support, you know, the kids in your community. And it's something that I also grew up with. If it wasn't my parents that were there, it's always aunts and uncles that were in attendance, because yeah. I had a cousin of a similar age range.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I were always, his dad was always there to support us when we had to play on a Tuesday or on a Wednesday or on a Thursday. And I'm talking about here at like 3:30, 2:30, there about immediately after school.
Yeah.
So it's a discussion that comes out of the community setting or out of the household setting. When you now bounce it up to club level after high school,
mm-hmm.
it gets tricky, HD, because when I played indoor hockey right after high school, I joined a club. What was that club's name? It wasn't Vintook Old Boys. It was something Pirates. The discussion there, it was more of a feel-good factor, you know, indoor hockey or inline hockey, as they call it.
Yeah.
No, inline is the one with rollerblades. Indoor is the smaller, you know, the six-man or seven-man team function of normal field hockey.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When we played that at DTS, it was more of a feel-good factor. We were high school kids that just recently finished matric, your first year on university in Namibia. You obviously also need something that carries on the momentum of your activities from the previous year on high school into the new year. And it was a great experience. And you now get to put yourselves against, at that stage, the guys to beat were always UNAM. There were like a few fellow Centaurus high school hockey players that were on that team.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of them were also representatives of Namibia's national men's team. And it was always mentioned that the same thing on high school rugby, that you stand a better chance of being selected for a national team colors if you were already part of a club system here in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at that stage back then, when it was still Ministry of Sport and Youth and all that other stuff, you know, separated from Ministry of Basic Education, there was a little bit of a conflict area because Ministry of Education did not condone high school children being part of sports club activities.
Yeah.
Even though there was a blatant sort of like flaunting of that rule specifically in rugby and specifically in field hockey at the time. And I'm talking about here 2003,
mm-hmm.
2004, even as early as 2002, because I remember some of the guys that I played against on St. Paul's, from the St. Paul's rugby hockey teams, they were already club members and they were already representing Namibia. If Namibia, the senior Namibia men's team, not the age group level, the senior Namibia men's team for hockey had to go and compete way in South Africa or way in Egypt or wherever on the African continent. So, there was a blatant, you know, flaunting of that rule. Rugby did the same. They wanted talent as quickly as possible for the clubs. I know that the football teams did the same thing. The concern is obviously very high, specifically about player safety and the likes, because,
mm-hmm.
like I mentioned a little bit earlier, player safety is something that is not focused upon. It's, I don't know, it's still in 2026, we are still not focusing on player safety, player well-being, because we hear of the players that end up with the injuries, they've got an 8-to-5 job. How are you going to, if you're now a courier, let's say you work at a courier company,
yeah.
you play as a rugby player, or you play as a football player, or as a hockey player. Now you've got to explain to your boss that why you can't walk properly in the warehouse, for example.
Hold on for a quick commercial, Dwight, sorry.
Yep.
Care that goes where you go. That's international travel insurance through NHP. We facilitate cover of up to 10 million Namibian dollars per member for medical emergencies abroad as part of your membership. No extra charge. To receive your policy within minutes, simply register at nhp.com.na before you travel. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Yeah, so speaking of player welfare, we had a message from NHP there. You were saying, right?
Yeah, so even in that regard specifically, you know, you're now a working individual. You need to pay, you need to earn money. You need to start with your career.
Yeah.
If you get injured on a Saturday or Sunday match, whether it's playing in the football league of Namibia or in the rugby league of Namibia or in the hockey league of Namibia,
mm-hmm.
You get injured there. How are you going to explain to your boss on Monday why you can't walk properly,
yeah.
why you've got damaged ligaments, or why you've torn a specific muscle? And let's, for example, say you work in a sort of like physically challenging environment for your job. Let's mm-hmm. say even if the person was a media person, let's say the person was a cameraman.
Mm.
And you now have to go and cover a function and you've got only one functioning leg. Your boss will not understand that, HD.
Yeah.
Because they'll ask you, it's either you drop the activity that you love or you lose your job.
Exactly.
It's one of the two things. So it's, grassroots is under threat specifically from, an environment of care, meaning that it's not there. It's a lack of care and a lack of welfare mechanisms being placed in and around the athletes that we've got, both men and women. And secondly, from economic perspectives, because welfare also costs money. And yeah. we need to start looking after our athletes a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dwight, while I still have you, let's now touch on the statement itself. I'm sure yeah. you've had the opportunity to go through this restructuring statement. What are your initial thoughts after reading it?
It's a weird statement. I'll be honest with you. It's weird because obviously, as I mentioned at the start of the discussion, when you asked the question, what do I think, before we get into the statement, what do I think, was there something on the cards, meaning Namibia not qualifying mm-hmm. for World Cup? And when I said yes, it was just a matter of when. The statement answers, okay, so what happens now question that obviously existed since October last year up and until now, February. Yeah, we're in February. So mm-hmm. for 3 months, we were in limbo, technically. For 3 months. And you could probably debate if anyone has insider knowledge in terms of the administrative patterns and schedules and calendar of Rugby Namibia or Namibia Rugby.
Yeah.
You could probably debate, you know, they were probably trying to finish up the 2025 administrative and financial functions of 2025 and thus get full blast into the affairs for 2026.
Mm-hmm.
But still, for 3 months, at least after October's disappointing, attempt at trying to have a last chance qualifying ability to the World Cup, this statement should have at least come out in November or in December.
Mm-hmm.
To get all the particular stakeholders together and tell them, hey, listen, we're assessing the situation. Obviously, we have missed out on the World Cup, which is only next year in 2027.
Yeah.
And because this year is FIFA in the US. And this is the particular position and the particular situation we are going to work with. So it's a good thing that they're now actually giving feedback. The timing is not adequate,
mm-hmm.
Primarily because it now seems to fit in with the New Year's resolution that was thought up last week.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm sorry, jokes aside, but it literally looks now like a New Year's resolution.
Yeah.
So they're giving a frame of 2026 to 2031, which is the next World Cup year, just to be safe. Yeah, it's the next World Cup year. No, actually, I think 2027. Yeah, it's the next World Cup year.
Mm-hmm.
No, man, it's not the next World Cup year.
It'll be 2032. Is it every four or 5 years?
Every five. It's similar to FIFA World Cups.
The cricket World Cup. If it's every five, then it's 2032, because then World Cup is 2027.
Because they literally fall, if it's 2026, then FIFA is 2030, the next World Cup. You're right. It's the four or five year sequence. That means that 2031 is the next World Cup.
Yeah.
If FIFA is 2030, then what's his name? Then rugby and cricket is 2031.
Yeah.
So,
and Go ahead.
And it seems to reflect. Okay, what are they going to do? What are they going to try and improve for the next World Cup cycle, which is now the 2031 cycle? But yeah, it's about understanding how this strategy that they mentioned here will literally manifest on the ground. What would it look like? And what would be the first sort of like starting elements for you to start off from? Because it's a nice thing that they indicated here's pillars. How many of these pillars? Yeah, five pillars for them to start off on. But I would like to know what they actually reflect. Obviously, it'll be difficult to try and understand commercial growth and financial sustainability. On the commercial growth element, I don't know what that looks like. Does this mean more tournaments or the ability for the national team to play in more international matches? Because that was supposedly one of the issues why we don't perform so well when our country has to go and perform and qualify.
Yeah.
Is they reference, we only played so many international matches between the last World Cup and this World Cup. We played 10. And you go like, 10? How is that possible?
Yeah.
So don't they count the Rugby Africa Cups and stuff like that? So it'll be interesting how we see that.
Yeah, no, the interesting thing about this whole statement is, firstly, maybe you can tell me, but has the NRU released like a glimpse into their strategic plan before, like the cycle before? Did they make it public?
Not really. I tried checking on, do they actually expand on this thing before what happened on Thursday when they had the statement and they brought out this document. The only assumption that I can apply here, and even this is also based upon, media reports before the 2023 World Cup, which we attended, what insight could you get into the everyday stuff? The day-to-days and things like that. So it's obviously a scenario that we are dealing with once again here in Namibia, that data is not something that is freely available or even just basic information sets about knowing what's actually going on in the sport that you like. Because, you just have to show up. And if you're not a fan of a specific club, you would not know, how that club fits into the ecosystem. And you would not know from the hearsay and the oral sort of like information sharing elements, because nothing is done on paper, what's actually happening in terms of the governance of the game. And the guys that are obviously the chairmen and owners of the clubs in Namibia, in rugby, they're the only guys that actually have a know-how or actually know what's going on in the umbrella body of Rugby Namibia or Namibia Rugby. So it's completely a closed off, insulated situation, which is obviously not looking good. And just to highlight this whole sort of like reset and rebuild strategy looks almost like it almost tries to emulate the NDP6. And this is not a joke I'm making, H. Literally, it tries to emulate the NDP6 in terms of saying, we have this goal. We have this pillar. This is the desired goal that we want to achieve. But it doesn't say how are we going to achieve it.
Yeah, no. So,
for example, if you look at stabilizing finances, financial sustainability and commercial growth, stabilizing the union's financial position through improved financial management and diversified sustainable revenue streams, reducing reliance on performance-linked funding cycles. What does that actually mean?
That was going to be my question. What does that mean? Sustainable revenue streams from where?
From where?
And then reducing reliance on performance-linked funding. So where else is your funding going to come from?
Exactly. So what was the performance-linked funding? Was it participating in Rugby Africa competitions and then the World Cup qualifying mechanisms and being in the World Cup itself? Or is this a discussion based upon somewhere money was being bled into activities that probably are deemed, you know, surplus to requirements?
Yeah.
And, you know, certain activities were just sort of like not actually creating any benefit for the team qualifying.
Mm-hmm.
Are we taking an accountant's approach to a sport? Because a sport, technically, the only way you can make the bona fide or serious money is if you have image and TV rights with broadcasting entities.
Yeah.
And advertising sponsorship that obviously has to be increased. This is not a discussion of saying, hey, listen, guys, we're now converting everyone into professional levels, and then everyone has to, is just going to get, you know, sort of like massive bonus payments in that scenario. No, it has to be a structured thing that actually shows a sustainability model. And if you ever have the opportunity, HD, of looking at the sustainability components that World Rugby has, World Rugby actually, well, they literally say you must do something that sees actual growth on the ground from grassroots to your top league in your country for both men and women. So this means we're supposed to see something that Cricket Namibia is doing happening in Rugby Namibia or Namibia Rugby's same ecosystem. Yeah.
That's what one of the callers said also, like, there's no rugby happening in the north.
No, there's not. There were a few teams.
When they talk about the north, they mean like, I think there's like a rugby club in Tsumeb maybe or something like that. But that's about it.
But there was a team, I remember there was a team that they tried having known as Etosha. There was a team, Tsumeb had its own rugby team. Grootfontein had its own rugby team at a stage. And these were predominantly farmers.
Yeah, Grootfontein still has a team,
Yeah, they still have a team, but Grootfontein comes and goes. The same with Otjiwarongo, comes and goes.
Yeah.
There was that other rugby club that I named, named as Etosha. I could never figure out where Etosha was actually based. Was it based in Tsumeb or was it based in Grootfontein?
Yeah.
And was it the local rival for Grootfontein? Or the local rival for Otjiwarongo? Rundu at one stage tried having a rugby team, at one stage, also based upon a bunch of local farmers there, which also highlighted that, you know, who's trying to promote the game?
Yeah.
Or is the game being conducted like someone's hobby, for that matter? And that literally was the state of the game, post 2025 or up to 2025, is that the game is being conducted or being administered like someone's hobby.
Yeah.
And the thing is, World Rugby wants to see real results. I mean, just to give you an example, I know Chile has a bigger population than us. Even Uruguay, they've got a bigger population than us. But you know what they did the one time that those two countries qualified for World Cup, HD? They used the participation funding, you know, the money you get for qualifying to the World Cup, you get like a participation fee.
Yeah.
They used that money to start a pro league setup, so that they can have constant talent coming through to carry the national representation going ahead.
Precisely.
So Chile and Uruguay have done the best, in my eyes, that I wanted Namibia to do since 2007. We've been attending World Cups since 2007, HD.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's high time we start seeing literally how this rebuild and reset, or reset and rebuild strategy, now manifests in the next 5-year cycle of the country.
And what I find interesting about this rebuild and reset document that they made public is, I don't really see anything like new in there. Like, all of the things that they mentioned are things that you would assume were already happening within the union. So, like, my question is, if you're putting things in like high performance and national pathway rebuild, like, what was happening before?
Exactly.
Or if you put in competitions and participation growth, like shouldn't these have been part of the union, like from the beginning of time already? Like what it, I feel like this is just a generic statement, like you said, NDP6 kind of thing.
Yeah, it's an NDP6 kind of flavored statement. On aspects of, obviously, of things like governance, reporting, and stakeholder communication. I mean, we have to understand this. Entities like the NFA, like the NRU, and even like Cricket Namibia, they are technically private entities. Yes, they would have some sort of an ownership model to, or ownership element to the, what's that thing's name? The Sports Council or the Sports
Commission?
Yeah, the Sports Commission.
Yeah.
But, I mean, actually, if you are well run, you don't need to report anything to the Sports Commission. You can do your own thing. It's just a question of, would you be allowed to represent Namibia, you know?
Yeah.
Having national colors at a, if you're participating in an Olympic recognized sport, because rugby wasn't one of those sports up until 2015, I think,
mm-hmm.
because it, for the first time it came to 2019 with the Sevens rugby, which is a bit weird because Sevens rugby is a different format of rugby union.
Mm-hmm.
Same rules, but just lesser guys. I still believe, me personally, that the Olympics should have allowed the full 15-man rugby format because there was already an established women's rugby World Cup for the 15-man women's side. And I don't know why they went for sevens, because sevens is shorter formats. You can complete that within 2 days, a competition, whereas the 15-man side literally could have had the same format that the Olympic football men's format has. You know, you have to play it over a week, like a regular 2 week or a week format. And that would have allowed more value specifically for the stadium and the infrastructure that would be meant for an Olympic function to be utilized. So, yeah, but obviously it's the powers that be in World Rugby that decided to give the Sevens Rugby sort of like the first element to participate in that. But getting back to the statement, getting back to the function, it's just weird. HD, primarily about the rebuilding.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously now, that means you and me specifically, who are the journalists in this discussion, we now have to look forward to what this technically speaks to. Because I am actually looking for we now have a template that shows you can create something that builds and has an inclusive nature specifically, and that sees great resilience manifest in itself,
mm-hmm.
like Cricket Namibia has been doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's next door to the rugby union.
You know, and they're right opposite from each other.
Yeah.
And obviously the greater concern has been also that these guys have developed, the cricket guys, they've developed up-to-date world-class relevant infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
that allows them to have the opportunity to host the Cricket World Cup matches alongside Zimbabwe and South Africa,
exactly.
in Namibia.
Exactly.
And if you go look at the Hage Geingob Rugby Stadium, I mean, that stadium is like 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It would need a good upgrade currently. And for Namibia to take the game forward, we actually also need to see rugby stadiums or rugby fields, but you can put that on a soccer field as well. A rugby field is the same size as a soccer field.
Yeah.
You need to start seeing this manifestation happen. And a rugby field has got a similar sort of like maintenance requirement as a football field.
Mm-hmm.
But a cricket field has got a greater maintenance scenario because the surface, the playing surface, is a lot bigger than that of a soccer and a rugby.
We see that gets maintained like during matches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the particular need has to be a 360 degree need, 365-day maintenance plan.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be a plan specifically where you are also talking to the School Sports Commission. And it's a good thing that they spoke also just the day before that, where the School Sports, the executive responsible from Namibia Rugby spoke about, you know, the polishing up or updating of certain rules that allows certain kinds of school children to participate in selection for rugby. But it's a discussion still. HD. I still feel if you get the player welfare mechanisms right,
mm-hmm.
you try to develop a system that sees talent maintenance or talent retention, but through support mechanisms, because the only reason players don't play anymore is specifically they see, okay, my body is being battered and bruised more often than me having, let's say, a fight at school or a fight in the street.
Yeah.
And I'm not seeing some sort of a return on that particular effort that I'm investing.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously the player just says the next year, you know, for the club, I'm not going to play anymore because, you know, upkeep of the injuries is becoming more expensive.
Yeah.
So that would be some of the features that I would like to see change.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, I don't care about governance and the reporting because the governance and reporting only takes place to the sponsors
mm-hmm.
and the executives of the other clubs and to World Rugby and to Rugby Africa and to the South African Rugby Union. I actually want to see the aspects regarding the ecosystem resilience and the ecosystem strengthening.
Yeah, no, I concur with that. And I just think it's odd when you say, you know, we're releasing this big restructuring thing, and then the very first point in there is governance. Like, what was happening for the past 20 years? But anyways, Dwight, thank you for your time. The matriarch is here giving me the evil eyes. My time has run out.
Not a problem.
Thank you very much for your contribution. And we'll have further rugby discussions in the future.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Dwight Links giving us some good insight there on the proposed restructuring of the rugby union. My time, unfortunately, has run out on the Eagle Sports Zone, but I will be with you same time, same place next week, Sunday. Don't forget, tomorrow morning, the Villager paper will be published. If you haven't subscribed already, send a WhatsApp message and save the following number. That's 081-200-4144. And I'll see you same time, same place next week, Sunday.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Brought to you by Premier Bet Namibia Totes. Create your account now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia 264. Premier Bet, win big, win now.